Welcome to Journal Club. I'm Malcolm Diggs. Shenzhen is a bustling metropolis. 17.5 million people, millions of homes, millions of cars, millions of workplaces. But it wasn't always this way. In fact, it wasn't even this way recently. 30 years ago, Shenzhen was a tenth of its current size. 40 years ago, it was a quarter of that. The growth experienced in this region over the last half century has been incredible. And the city is still growing so quickly that local municipalities are having a hard time even tracking the growth. This makes the day-to-day practice of governing somewhat difficult. Common tasks like land use classification, population density estimation, and even housing price tracking have become non-trivial. The census is only conducted in China once every 10 years, so how are they supposed to keep track of the population in the meantime? In today's paper, researchers have developed what they feel is a novel solution. They're using anonymized data from cell phone towers to create what they call an MTE, multi-view trajectory embedding, a data structure that captures spatial, temporal, and transition perspectives. These structures embed the movements of the population into useful and usable forms that can aid in routine population analysis. At the core of this research are the interrelated concepts of unsupervised representation learning, vector embeddings, and graph neural networks. Let's take a moment to review these to make sure we're all on the same page. Unsupervised representation learning. If you don't label your training data, then you don't provide any ground truth to the model while it's being trained. So rather than learn how the dataset is relevant to specific labels, the model learns how the dataset is relevant to itself, what patterns exist, what structures exist, and how it all interrelates. This is unsupervised representation learning in a nutshell. Vector embeddings. Generally speaking, models don't deal with complex data structures directly. They deal with a version of the data that has been converted into a numerical vector. This vector doesn't only represent the source structure, but that structure's relationship to other structures and data. Graph neural networks, GNNs. While a traditional neural network might deal with basic data types and structures, a GNN is purpose-built to understand graphs, meaning nodes and edges. Graphs are particularly well-suited representing complex relationships between many entities and irregular data. With that out of the way, let's look at the data these researchers collected and how they built their MTE system. At any given time, your cell phone will generally try to connect you to the most convenient, that is the closest, cell tower that it's compatible with. As you move around your city, your phone is constantly disconnecting from one cell tower and establishing communication with a different one. In this study, they call that action a transition. The authors were able to acquire anonymized transition data from over 16 million cell phone users in Shenzhen over a two-day period. The data for each user forms what they're calling a trajectory, which is just a series of individual transitions. Each transition corresponds to a location, a time, and an individual. So each trajectory represents all the movements for a single person over the course of a two-day period. For the purpose of creating vector embeddings, they decided to represent the data through three different perspectives. The transition view. This is more or less how the data arrived, series of transitions from one cell tower to another. So a vector format of this view would represent the strengths of the relationships between different transitions. In other words, if a person crosses from region A to region B, how likely are they to also cross from B to C? The spatial view. Within the trajectory data is implied information about the user's region when they weren't transitioning from one region to another. For the spatial view, they reformatted the data to explicitly focus on these locations rather than the transitions to or from them. So in a vector form, this view captures the relationships between the regions themselves, not their transition points. Note the slight difference between transition view and spatial view. It's subtle, but important. The relationship between one region and another captures a slightly different kind of data than the relationship between the transition points that border those regions. The temporal view. This is probably the least intuitive view. Every transition happens at a longitude, a latitude, and a point in time. Storing the temporal data as vectors means storing how locations are correlated by time of day. For example, two locations may be nowhere near each other. They don't seem to be physically related in any way, but they both see a major influx of users at 9 a.m. and an outflow of users at 5 p.m. The transition and spatial views wouldn't catch how these regions are correlated or related, but the temporal view would. They created these various representations largely through unsupervised representation learning. They used a combination of SkipGram and an MVGRL, the multi-view graph representation learning model. The result was a GNN that encapsulated the information in the embeddings and could itself be used for inference. This model doesn't do much of anything on its own, so to test it out, they needed to apply the model to downstream tasks. They chose three use cases: land use classification, population density estimation, and housing price prediction. Here's how their model did in these different scenarios compared to several baseline models, all of which, the baseline and their model, being evaluated on accuracy, weighted precision, and weighted F1 score. Land use classification. The task here was to classify land into one of six types: natural and open space, commercial, residential, industrial, public service, and transportation or logistics land. The results were compared to the authoritative ground truth dataset for the region where the land was already classified by type. The classification from MTE, their new GNN, outperformed MNE, HIER, and several other baseline models. Side note, if you're wondering how on earth this data could tell the researchers anything about land use, think back to the earlier example about the temporally correlated regions where people arrive at 9 a.m. and leave at 5 p.m. If you see that pattern, you can probably infer that it's not residential. You see, just from that one pattern, you've already crossed one of the land use cases off the list. And as you go through the transition, spatial, and temporal views, you'll see more and more patterns like that, allowing you to narrow down to the right class of land. And remember, finding these kinds of patterns is exactly what unsupervised representation learning is great at. The next downstream task was population density estimation. Using a dataset from WorldPop as the baseline, they attempted to estimate the number of people actually living in each area. For this task, the MTE spatial view outperformed the others, including MNE and HDGE. This should be fairly intuitive. You can see what regions people occupy at what time of day, infer how many people live in each region, divide it by the size of the area, and you get density. The last downstream task was housing price prediction. They were able to collect ground truth data from a Chinese real estate agency called Lianjia. Sorry, I'm sure I butchered that name. They then tried to infer the price of housing. Again, MTE outperformed the others, followed by MNE. For anyone wondering how housing prices work generally in this area, it is largely on supply and demand, with a few more controls and bubble prevention mechanisms than you'd find in a Western democracy. But largely, if you can project what the demand for housing would be in an area, and you can assume a reasonably low vacancy rate in such a fast-growing city, then you have supply and demand figured out. You can infer housing prices, and that's what they did. So overall, the results were promising. In most cases, the model performed best when the three perspectives were used in tandem, but that wasn't always the case. There were times when leaving one or more perspectives out of the analysis produced slightly better results. What can we take away from this paper? Well, we've barely scratched the surface of how graph neural networks work or what they're capable of. For the sake of time, I glazed over a lot of the training mechanisms and the algorithms in use, but I'm hoping that this high-level overview has at least piqued your interest enough that you'd like to learn more. Not necessarily today, but maybe at some point in the future, you'll take a GNN for a spin or try your hand at playing around with some vector embeddings. If you'd like to do a deeper dive on the training and validation process for this graph neural network, or view the architectural diagrams that the authors created, or even the results tables that they included in their manuscript, then I'd encourage you to download the paper. If you want to view the code they wrote, or take a look at some of the embeddings they created, they put that all up on GitHub, and the link to the repository is in the data availability statement in the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.